Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello there, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Suns, a partly Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Cohen Olson, your host of Locked On Suns. Make sure you follow us on Twitter. That is at Locked On PHX Suns. That is the best way to stay up to date during the offseason. I know we have the draft, summer league free agency coming up. We're technically in the offseason here, so we're switching to this format of once a week and kind of touch and go. So the best way to stay updated on when the podcast is up is on our Twitter and then subscribing on iTunes, which you can find in the bio. For the second straight time, I am planning to have Cole's Wicker on. We have a nice little subject matter lined up to kind of base everything off of, and then the Sixers do stuff that makes us not do that. They are reportedly trading with not I'm doing a terrible job right now. It's 11 o'clock. I just got off 8 hours of work. Okay. They are reportedly in heavy discussions, strong talks, whatever you want to say that makes it sound like the deal is not done, but it's advanced talks is the term everyone uses, with the Celtics for the number one overall pick. This obviously has implications on the Suns, who pick at 4. So we're going to talk about that at the top of the show with Cole, and then we are also going to be talking about his podcast, What's on Draft. They recently talked about the Suns and had a couple of things on there that I agreed with, I disagreed with. You should go listen to that, by the way, if you haven't. So pause here, then come back, and we can talk about all that, and we'll still be here. Cole, how are you doing tonight?
Doing well, man. It seems like every time we have an agenda set, something happens. And, of course, I expected fireworks during this draft, but starting at 3, and I didn't expect it starting Friday. So it's I guess it's good to have in your pocket going into the weekend. Maybe we can recalibrate opinions. But, yeah, definitely a lot happened today.
You were the poor soul who missed it, too. Like, you weren't there when it was happening, because as you see it happening and developing, you can kind of follow the story a little bit better. But you kind of had to play catch-up there, so I felt bad for you. But are you caught up on everything, really?
For the most part, yeah. There's a lot of differing reports. Like, I think Bleacher Report had a report that it was, like, going to be formulated into a three-team deal with Chicago. We don't really know what the compensation is going to be draft pick-wise as far as is it going to be just the unprotected Lakers pick? Is it going to be the unprotected Kings pick in 2019? So there's still a bunch of stuff to suss out, but it seems like it definitely has backing.
So my opening question here for you is, as someone who has followed the draft more extensively than pretty much anyone, I know there are a couple of guys you would shout out there ahead of you and stuff, but I consider you up there with the best. And what is your immediate reaction to something like this? Because piecing together all the different reports, I've done the same. And what it looks like the framework of this deal is number 3 from the Sixers, the Lakers pick from the Brandon Knight trade. Hello, that's back in the mix. 4, number 1 overall. That is what it looks like this deal is for the framework. Now, we don't know if, like, the Sixers are going to throw in another pick, but I found it very telling that Woj's column mentioned the Lakers pick, but did not mention the Sacramento pick. The Sixers also have a 2019 unprotected pick from the Kings that was not mentioned. So I'm assuming that it's not in the deal just because he didn't mention it, and he would usually have the framework for what's in mind. And the craziest thing about this is Zach Lowe went on SportsCenter and pretty much said that the parameters of the deal have been agreed upon. It's just coming down to formalities. And it looks like from other reports, Markelle Fultz needs to have a meeting with the team, and the team needs to get his medical information too. So this is one of those things where the deal appears to be done, but it's going to take another 48, 72 hours. But from a draft perspective, I think the immediate take here, first of all, like you tweeted out, like, holy bleep, the Sixers now have 3 of the best prospects in the last 3 drafts. They have 3 franchise cornerstone guys here. But beyond that, first talk about obviously Fultz and Simmons, but then what do you think it does at 3?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that comes to your mind is you rarely see organically a team draft arguably the top talent in 3 different drafts. It just rarely happens that way. Oklahoma City, you can lay claim to maybe that a little bit, but it just never happens. You never get the chance to acquire that level of talent. It's really hard to get the number 1 overall pick. That gets lost in translation a lot. It rarely gets traded. We see very rare instances with, like, Minnesota and Cleveland in a very specific circumstance with Kevin Love and Andrew Wiggins, but just you never see young cores grow together like this. There's usually always free agency components, trade components. It rarely ever happens on the drafted team. And this was, like, the vision of Sam Hinkie, right? Like, this is, like, the ultimate validation where you literally put judicious, you value every single move you do And that's how you gain advantages in this league, as far as every single move you make, every single signing, trade, everything matters. And we see that add up to this ultimate, you know, testament of that with it manifesting with the roster. I'm not sure if people in the league viewed this whole draft the same way that a lot of media members did with like this Fultz number one tier. I think that's important to keep in mind with the Celtics. We don't know what they're going to do. Are they going to go all in on the short term? A lot of people think this is like just getting an extra pick to throw at Chicago for Jimmy Butler. But it very easily could be that they just didn't value Fultz that much higher than, say, Josh Jackson at three. And if you're going to give him an unprotected Lakers pick next year where you have two really high ceiling outcome players like Michael Porter and then Luka Doncic, like that makes a lot of sense. So we don't really know what their methodology is yet. Boston could go a lot of different ways. But just from a Philly standpoint, I just think you rarely ever see circumstances like this.
It's crazy. Like the thing that immediately hit me was that it's Fultz, Simmons, and Embiid together, and that Ainge is a freaking moron for doing this in his own conference. Like, you are, I think if that even comes to fruition with Fultz and Simmons, let alone if Embiid's health is there, if Fultz and Simmons turn out to be what everyone thinks that they will be, then they're going to be the dominating force in the Eastern Conference, I think, for the foreseeable future from like 2 or 3 years down the line, whenever they start really turning and developing. The two questions I want to go with here are, let's talk about the number three pick from a couple of different scenarios. Let's talk about it if Boston has it, if Chicago has it, and if Indy has it. So let's say that Fultz and Ball are going to go 1 and 2 no matter what. Who do you have at three for the Celtics taking if it turns out the Celtics are indeed making the pick at number three?
That's a great question. I think that this general stigma of it being a three-player draft with Fultz, Ball, and Jackson, that might not necessarily be true. You see a lot of Jason Tatum kind of energy coming in right now. I think that I remember Sam Vecenie saying this. They talked to league executives, and they felt like it was a four-player draft, and then it kind of dropped off a little bit. There was still a lot of depth, of course, but there was a general top four tier, and Tatum was a part of that. You see Tatum linked to Boston. I think that's a possibility. I think that Josh is the heavy favorite there as far as all three of those teams. I mean, if they're moving a guy like Butler, if they're moving Paul George, that's a guy that you can technically see fitting in that same mold as far as a wing creator of some sorts. I've loitered a lot on Jackson recently. We can talk about that in a little bit. But just overall, I think that you're looking at probably Jackson at three or Tatum at three. I don't know if anybody else goes there. Boston, if they keep the pick, is not going to go De'Aaron Fox, because this is a pretty much an indictment of them taking a lead guard, right? If they wanted to take a lead guard and pair him with Isaiah, they would have just taken Fultz, unless the deal is just too good for them to pass up. So really, I think it's going to be Tatum or Josh there, and I think Josh is probably the heavy favorite regardless of what happens with the pick.
My dream situation for this happening is that Boston trades the pick and then takes DSJ at three, and then we get Fultz versus Dennis Smith Jr. in Summer League, and it's just like Fultz trying to absolutely murder this guy, and then the same thing, because I bet Dennis Smith Jr. thinks he's the best player in this class, so it's just going to be these two guys trying to kill each other. It will probably be the most lit Summer League game that I've ever seen in my life, and that anyone has ever seen. I'm really excited for that. But I agree with you. I think that I saw the Tatum logic kind of forming there with Jaylen Brown, and I understand like how their styles contrast in a good way, and you're getting something different from Tatum than you are from Brown. But at the end of the day, I think Jackson and Brown together is just better, and I think that you're getting different things from those guys still, even if like the archetype, it's kind of like the Bender-Isaac argument, which I'm sure we'll get into later, is that they have similarities, but together they can still be something really special, and that doesn't mean that they can't be based on their similarities. So I think if Chicago or Indy gets the pick, I still think it's going to be Josh Jackson, because Paul George, Jimmy Butler, two-way wing, I think that's more likely going to be Josh Jackson than it is going to be Jason Tatum. I think Jackson is just the better prospect at this point. So that is why I tweeted out that this is a horrible situation for the Suns, because the good thing about lottery night was that Philly at three, do they take Malik Monk? Mark is depressed as hell, or was, I should say. Now he's ecstatic. But Mark was downright suicidal, it sounded like, at the idea of taking Malik Monk at three, and pretty much guaranteed that Colangelo would do it. Maybe they take De'Aaron Fox. Who knows what happens there, Jason Tatum. But now it just seems like it's a near lock, I should say, that Josh Jackson goes three, and it seems like you're in that same sentiment.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. I mean, it's so hard to tell because there's so many moving parts still to be discovered. I think if Boston keeps the pick, I think they'll take Josh. He just fits that kind of, like, in air quotes, two-way, hard-nosed kind of player. He fits that culture as far as the physicality, the toughness, the mental edge. So there's a lot of things that Jackson brings to the table that fit with Boston. And when I think Josh Jackson is going to carry the most trade value just from the general sentiment of this being like a three or four player top tier when it comes to NBA executives and Jackson, I think, is a little bit more tradable and has a little bit more value than Tatum does at this juncture.
Okay, quick exercise here. Did not prepare you for this. I don't even know what my answer would be, so I'm glad I'm asking you first. The best team in the East in 5 years, is it the Celtics? Is it the Cavaliers? And I'm going to add with the Cavaliers that they keep LeBron, they keep Kyrie, and they keep Kevin Love. Is it the Washington Wizards? You got Bradley Beal, you got John Wall. Is it the Milwaukee Bucks with Giannis, or is it the Sixers with this core three, assuming the trade goes through?
I can give you kind of a hardline answer and say it's going to be the Cleveland Cavaliers or the Philadelphia 76ers. I think that either one of those two teams, it depends on when LeBron delves off, if he ever does. I'm never going to vote against LeBron against like inferior competition unless some team really puts together the assets to challenge Cleveland. I just think that he's gonna age decently well, but of course he's going to plateau at some point. We'll see when that happens. This core, though, with Philly, man, it's unheard of that they have this kind of talent level at the top. And in 5 years, and these guys are like, well, Embiid would be what, like 26, 27? He's in his prime. We'll see what Simmons does. Fultz is going to be still pretty young, 23-ish. Yeah, I think these are the guys that you're going to have to be looking out for in that conference.
I think it comes with the caveat, too, that me and you are huge TLC believers. Timothy Luwawu-Cowerbo, I think he's going to be great. And we also know how good Robert Covington is. It's not the fact that if Robert Covington is good or not, he's good. It's just whether you know it or not by watching Sixers basketball the past couple of years. Mark, obviously, in your ear all the time telling you how Robert Covington is good and everything. You know for a fact. But I think that also factors into me as well as them having TJ McConnell as the best backup point guard in the league. Enough said, right? Easy.
I mean, that team fits together really well, right? If you think about it conceptually, TLC would guard point of attack defensively. Fultz would be your one-position defender and guard two, so he doesn't have to exert the same kind of energy, you know, guarding opposing point guards. Then you have Covington to check the best wing. You have the best defensive center potentially in the game in Embiid. You just completely monopolize the primary initiator equity by taking Fultz, too. So now you have Simmons and Fultz who can initiate the offense. Fultz can play off ball because he can shoot spotting up. Simmons can play in pick and roll as the dive man, as a playmaking four. And, of course, you have Embiid who can space the floor. It really comes down to how well – I mean, those guys progress. That's the key, of course, right? Your stars have to be stars. But those ancillary guys, if TLC can shoot a lot better than he did last year, if Covington continues to improve – I don't know how you guard that team as far as like a two-way. They're a two-way team because they're anchored defensively by arguably the best defensive prospect we've seen in a while. And they have defensive prospects at every position except for maybe Fultz, who has the strength and the length to hold serve against most wings. So it really is a rare team.
And they're going to have their own picks coming up. It's not like this is a situation where they're unloading their picks to put themselves in the situation. I mean, they're going to give up one, maybe two in this deal if it happens, but they're still going to have the picks to fill in those gaps. And is it bad that I'm more excited to see how that team grows than I am when the Warriors signed KD? Like, maybe it's because all the players are new and I want to see how Fultz plays in the NBA, but I'm honestly more excited for that team than I am the Warriors. That's a problem. That shows when you're a draft nerd, I think, when you're more excited. It's just seeing we haven't seen Ben Simmons or Markelle Fultz play NBA basketball yet. It's crazy.
There's so much intrigue with those guys. I think the Warriors, right when KD went there, it was like entertaining, but you knew it was going to be dominant. This is much more like, I think it's going to be really good. But when you have the allure and like the unknown of young guys, especially top tier prospects that are coalescing together, that's the thing. Like, this never happens with this top shelf talent. Again, not to hammer that point home. It's just, I think that is more intrigue because that goes into draft philosophy and a bunch of stuff like that as far as team building, which I think everybody can appreciate. The Warriors system, I mean, the Warriors team basically it's never really happened before and not anybody can relate to it. This is more like what happens when you actually, you know, stockpile assets, you value every decision that you make, and you put all this forward over like a 5-year period to actually building a competitive team, and everybody should be able to relate to that.
Okay, we'll start talking about the Suns. Sorry, everyone that's looking for the Suns angle in this. I'm just so fascinated by this. Like, the thing I just thought of is, like, if you told someone, like, the whole Sam Hinkie plan, like, I would be in, first of all, I'm sure you would have loved it and been like, yeah, let's do it. And they would be like, what's the best case scenario? You would probably tell them back, getting two, maybe three of, like, the best players or best prospects, I should say, in each class. And that's exactly what his plan has done. He's not there to see it out, of course, but the fact that it's there and he's got it, at least in Simmons and Embiid already, and potentially could have it in Fultz too, is just nuts. All right, let's move on to the Suns. You and Mark Whittington had a great conversation on your podcast, What's on Draft, where you basically discuss the idea of three different teams that should not be looking at their roster in terms of drafting. They should just be looking at who they think the best prospect is. And your guys' reasoning behind this is you're looking at three teams, the Kings, the Magic, and the Suns. And you don't have a team that has a true this is where we get dangerous and we have Suns fans showing up at my house. this is where you, we talked about this on your first time on the show and people got very angry with you and me too about talking about Devin Booker like he wasn't a future destined superstar. But the bottom line is he's not. You talked about this on the podcast. There are some areas in his game that he needs to grow in order to get to that sort of outlook where you're saying, yeah, when this guy's in his prime, he is one of the 10, 15 best players in the league. Like, that's what we're talking about. Like, probably top 5 or 10, honestly, if we're talking star, superstar level. And there are just holes in his game right there. So if the Suns truly do believe that someone like Malik Monk is the best player available, they should take him. Now, playing them together is obviously a disaster, but they should take him if that's their thought process. Now, where I don't get too far into this thought exercise for me is I don't see that class in this way. I just don't see there being a way that you're on the board at number 4 and you think without a doubt that someone is the best player available if we're assuming that Fultz, Ball, Jackson go 1-2-3, because I think if Lonzo falls to 4, we can talk about this later, that they should absolutely take him. But I don't think there's a scenario there where they're going to think that player X is the best guy available by a distinct margin. Where are you at in that element of the argument? Because Mark was very dead set on it, and I didn't really get a feel for how committed you were to the idea.
Yo, everybody get up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Yo!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Let me just start with the foundation here as far as defining relatively what a star player is. The 4 best players in the league right now are LeBron, KD, Steph, and Kawhi Leonard. Those guys are superstars, right? It starts there. That's the analysis. Everything else is relative to that point. So when we say that Devin Booker is unlikely to be those players, that's not really like a hot take. That's just a reality of the situation. Like that shouldn't be an insult to anybody who listens to this if you put it in those kinds of terms. I mean, we use terminology like stars, all-stars, superstars, franchise players to like freely without just like qualifying what exactly they are.
Yeah, you caught me catching myself there. I kind of realized what I said. And well, top 15, you're talking like an all-star pretty much, top 20. But if you're talking about superstar, top 5, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's exactly right. And I think that Booker can be an all-star. Absolutely. I mean, I highlighted this on my podcast with Mark. It's his scoring prowess and his instincts as far as being able to create off the dribble and pick and roll, you know, bully smaller guards in the post. Like he does have ridiculous productivity for a young player in the scoring departments. But when you look at the really impactful players, they're either self creators and they can create for others at a high level, especially if they're taking things off the table defensively, right? Like if he's a two-way player and he's a really good shooter, that's really valuable. Then you have like potentially a Kawhi light type of player, but he's not that guy. Right now he is a self-creator who doesn't create for others at a high level, and he takes a lot off the table defensively. And that might be an all-star caliber player because frankly, like DeMar DeRozan's an all-star caliber player, but is he really a player that's conducive to winning basketball on the highest levels? Booker might have more, you know, natural gifts than DeMar DeRozan does. I gave like a realistic, not necessarily ceiling comp, but maybe a median outcome potentially of a CJ McCollum on the podcast as far as that kind of player. Because now that's kind of the trajectory I see him going. If he becomes a better shooter, he's a secondary kind of playmaker type on the wing, but doesn't have necessarily that playmaking acumen for others to run the lead guard position, which would change his projection completely. If he becomes a primary initiator, which is in his realm of outcomes, I don't think it's impossible. He showed enough handle. He's shown enough playmaking where I'm somewhat interested. I don't think that's a likely outcome, but if he becomes that player, he can be tremendously valuable. So I think that he is a really good player. But again, we have to go back to what are you comparing this to? Like the minutes Embiid showed this year, we're like, this guy looks like a franchise caliber player, yes. like a top six player, even as a big man. Giannis is the same way. Like he's that primary initiator wing that looks like a two-way force that could be the number one overall player in the league. So it's all about putting things in perspective as far as that goes. I'm high on Booker, and I do think that there is some validity to drafting around him a little bit. I'm much the same, to answer your original question, I'm much the same as you. I don't necessarily see Monk as like this overarching talent. I have a tier from 2 to 7 in this class after Fultz, and I don't necessarily think any of them are going to be the caliber of players that people think they are. I think it's, for some, it's a long shot. So I do build that into my analysis as far as Monk is duplicative with Booker. Defensively, it would be a nightmare. And Monk isn't like a pure point guard either. So, yeah, I don't think he's this overarching talent where you can't pass on him. And I kind of feel the same way about Jonathan Isaac compared to Marquese Chriss and Dragan Bender. I like Isaac, but the fit is kind of tenuous. So I'll let you talk about that.
Yeah, this is something interesting to talk about with you, because I pretty much, it sounded like from your reaction to it, you hadn't really thought about too much Isaac and Phoenix on lottery night, and it sounded like you needed more time with it. And now that you've had time with it, it sounds like you've landed on a more concrete opinion. I still think that they should take Isaac 4. Matt Moore tweeted it out and basically said, like, you take Isaac, I know you have Chriss and Bender, but no matter what, the odds are you're landing with a great player at the 4 position. That is kind of the best player available mantra, and it also has to do with the fact that I have Isaac ranked 2nd on my board. I've said this a bunch of times. 2 through 5 for me is all about fit, but if I had to pick a player at 2, I'm just going to pick Isaac and be quote-unquote that guy. Isaac, I just really like the defensive versatility. We've talked about him way too much on this podcast anyway. I shouldn't even go into a scouting breakdown, really, but I think the trade-off with Bender and Chriss is that I think you're seeing a more well-rounded guy. I think Chriss is going to specialize, if he really forms out, he's going to specialize offensively and creating offensively for himself and then making those highlight plays. I don't think he is going to be consistent enough defensively yet. I still need to see another year or two and development in his fouls and things like that to really be feeling great about where he is defensively. Bender, it's more about you're going to get the defense. What else are you going to get? And I am the biggest Dragan Bender defender in the world. Everyone knows this, but we did not see anything else besides the defense. We saw blips here and there, but the bottom line is it was just defense in year one, and we need to see more, especially the shooting for both of them. You guys hammered that home point on the podcast. Couldn't agree more. If both of those guys are below 35% shooters from three, or even like, even if they're at like 34%, I think that's okay. But if both of them are around like 32, 33, they're in trouble. They're in real trouble. They need some sort of spacing from those guys. And I think that's where you run into the same problem with Isaac, is that if Isaac pans out defensively, if he shows a little bit offensively, that's all great. But at the end of the day, he needs to be at least an average three-point shooter for him to work out with that core group, and that's where you run into the trouble again. That's where you run into the trouble with this pick overall, because I think you have those same concerns about Tatum. I would prefer Tatum's shot over Isaac, and I'm starting to get a little bit more friendly to the idea of Tatum at 4. I still don't like it, but I think I could live with it. That's why I'm completely against De'Aaron Fox at number 4. This is why I like Dennis Smith Jr. at number 4. But it all comes back to shooting for me. There was somewhere I was going to go with this. What was my original question I asked you? I asked you about the fit, right, on the roster. So I think what it comes down to is you don't really take Booker into consideration heavily, but you still have him there as by far the one piece that stands out from the rest of the roster because of the rookie seasons that Bender and Chriss had. Still, with that in mind, is there someone that you are favoring it for more than others besides Dennis Smith? Because for you, that's an easy answer, because you have Dennis Smith ranked 2nd. This team needs a point guard of the future. Really easy pick for you. So you can't say Dennis Smith Jr. We talked about that on lottery night. You can go back and listen to that episode if you want to hear more, or if you want to listen to Cole on the various podcasts he's been on. He's been hammering home this point that I agree with, that Dennis Smith Jr. very well could be one of the 2-3 best prospects in this draft. But give me someone else besides DSJ you like it for.
Well, I've come around to your position. I think I'm in on Jonathan Isaac there.
Hey.
And watching more Josh Jackson film, more Jason Tatum film, I have Isaac ahead of both of those guys now. I think that I would go that direction. Isaac is really close with Monk. I've also warmed up to Monk as far as his just the rarity of his shooting at this stage. I think that his athletic intersection with the diversity of shot making is pretty underplayed actually in this class. So, but for the Suns, I think that's a position where you look at maybe positional value. You look at Isaac can play some 3. It's not ideal. He's definitely a 4 and a 5. That's where you get duplicative with the Bender point and the Chriss point. But there is some validity to just taking the best guy, and he does enough to where I think he's going to be valuable in multiple roles. The Suns are still, they're just collecting pieces. They don't really have that. That's the point with Booker, right? It's like he's shown a lot. He's shown productivity. He's been good for what he is, for sure. I mean, that was a hell of a pick, no question about it. But is he really a guy you're like, okay, we have our cornerstone, we're moving forward? I don't think he's that guy. So that means you take shots on guys you think could be valuable. I don't see Isaac as like this star player. I think he's more of a superstar role player. That's why I like Dragan Bender so much. So even if it's duplicative, I could definitely see them investing in him and seeing some defensive upside. He brings a really valuable skill set to the NBA. So you can also factor in potential trade value as well there. So but for me right now, I would say Isaac if I can't say Smith.
If you can't say Smith. But if you could say Smith, would you say Smith?
I would.
I just had to get it out there on the record. Yep. That we are there. I agree. I mean, I wrote two things. We're agreeing too much now, but I wrote the thing that Isaac very well could be the best option at number four. I wrote that a couple weeks ago, and then I said that if the Suns are looking for franchise point guard upside at number four and Ball and Fultz are off the board, Dennis Smith Jr. should be the pick, regardless of how they feel about Isaac or Tatum or Jackson or whoever it is, honestly. But the point that I was going to make a while ago that I was trying to find in my mind, but I couldn't, was the point you make about Booker is really interesting, because especially with his shooting, because I think you're looking at such a different one-way player in that. You watch Nikola Jokic, and obviously, right, he's a one-way player right now. We can say the defense needs to grow exponentially for him to be that two-way player. But he does so many things in such a special way that when you watch Booker, it's about the scoring. But if he was the shooter that he was supposed to be out of college, you're talking about that type of special player. If he's a 40% three-point shooter like we thought he could be, 38 to 40% every year, it seemed like that was a lock. I believe, I keep bringing up Mark, I don't mean to all the time, but he tweeted out like 2 years ago that he believed that Booker's shooting was elite, and that was that whole elite argument we got into, but that his shooting was elite, it was supposed to be elite, and I think that is the type of cornerstone you're talking about in him being an offensive player. I think we can just shoot it to the moon in terms of his defense. I just don't think it's ever going to be anything above below average, but his shot is the one thing where I'm going to be watching that the most, because we've seen the development in the pick and roll play. We've seen the development in him passing. I agree with you that I don't think he's ever going to be a primary initiator. It would be a very unlikely outcome. But I think if his shooting gets to around 39, 41% a year, and it wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world to happen. We thought this guy was going to be an amazing shooter. Turns out he wasn't for his first 2 years, but now that he's more settled, he grows into that. Would you have him in, I don't want to start ranking players, of course, but would you have him closer to that sort of cornerstone we're talking about if he became that type of shooter?
Probably still not for me. He would be a really valuable player on a good team. I do think he'd get to that point because he would demand gravity off the ball, but he could also create on it. Again, I'm going to bring up CJ McCollum. I think that that's kind of what you're looking at if he becomes a really good shooter, because that's what CJ McCollum is. He's an incredible shooter off the dribble. He can shoot off the catch at a high level. I mean, Booker's a little bit taller and he can do more as far as in the post and a little bit more creation-wise, I think, eventually as he ages. But still, you're looking at a guy who, if he doesn't create for others at an elite level and he doesn't defend, I don't know. He's probably like the third best player on a title team, but you still need those like two like stone cold dudes at the top, right? You need those two guys that are either bringing one elite skill as far as creation, big man defense. So I do like his outcome a lot more if he becomes the shooter. I think that he can have a lot of value, but still, you look at Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson is an awesome shooter, and even he gets cold, and what else does he really do? He defends his ass off. Like
He defends Kyrie better than almost anyone. That's what he does.
He defends point of attack. He's bringing value at all times. So, yeah, he doesn't have Booker's off the dribble game. I think that was always a bad comparison because Booker's actually a way better self-creator than Klay is. But if you're going to be that kind of guy, I do think you need to bring either initiation to some extent or even like legitimate secondary creation for others and defense. So if he's a shooter, conducive player in today's NBA, because teams are going to be scared as hell of him. He's going to demand gravity off the ball as well as on it. I just don't see him as like a one or two player on a title team.
It's interesting you brought him up, because I tweeted this out a couple months ago, like watching the Blazers. And I was like, it would be interesting to see like in a neutral setting, like, so we're not talking about in like Phoenix or in Portland, just to see the results of a poll. Like, who would you rather have right now? Would you rather have McCollum at 25? Or would you rather have Booker right now at 20? And the thing about McCollum at 25 right now, for those of you who haven't been following him too much, he averaged 23 a game this year. He shot 48% from field, 42% from three on five attempts a game, 5.5, and 91% for the line. So you're talking about elite efficiency at the shooting guard position and bringing all those other intangibles as a scorer and really just a complete offensive player that you're talking about. And that's really the fully developed stage that you hope to see Booker get to. And I have a feeling that most Suns fans would say no, they would rather have Booker to McCollum. But I think, honestly, if you look at a player like McCollum, that's the sort of ceiling outcome you want for Booker. Hopefully just a little bit more there. He's a little bit taller, so he can do a little bit more attacking the rim. But at the end of the day, that's the type of player you want to see him be. And that's the interesting discussion for me and where you kind of find yourself in a settled position on Booker's ceiling. At least for me, I do, because he's a really good comp and I really do enjoy having that example of right now, CJ McCollum's in his prime. This is what you're getting. This is what you're hoping to get from Devin Booker. And that's someone we're going to be really comparing him to for a couple of years now, I think. And I think that's a really good one. To wrap it up here, we've almost been going 30 minutes. We never really go long on this podcast, but I blame the Sixers and Danny Ainge for that. Not our conversation at all. They kind of stole the first half of the show from us. Is there anyone? Okay, this is a question I had planned and then I completely forgot about it. You can't say Jordan Bell because I've talked about Jordan Bell on this podcast so much. People are getting sick of hearing about Jordan Bell probably. Give me three guys that you think will not go in the top 20 of the draft that you really like. And if the Suns took them at 32, you would think that was a great pick.
Jonah Bolden's a guy that's recently jumped on the stage. I've watched his tape pretty in cursory fashion. He's an international kid, went to UCLA, just over 21, 6'10", 227 pounds. This guy is, he looks like the most modern four to me from what I've seen. He's really athletic. He can switch. He is a good shooter. He can play make a little bit in transition. He's just one of the guys that I look at that can probably defend at the four level. He's not the strongest guy, but he does have some momentum because I think people are going back and looking at his tape instead of his intangible off the court concerns at UCLA, which were admittedly, I've heard, really bad. So he hasn't gotten a lot of pub until now, but that's one guy new to look at. Derek White's another guy I'm sure you probably hit on at some point as far as being a rotation kind of creator. Yep. His tape really blew me away. I mean, he's obviously only 1 year at Colorado, but if you watch his senior tape, man, his playmaking is super underrated. Like, he can make all the reads and pick and roll, got really good feel. His off-the-dribble shooting game is there as far as making that scheme-changing three, good at getting to his spots and then hitting fadeaways with a little bit of a lean on his shot. So those guys above everybody else stand out to me. If OG somehow falls, because we've seen kind of like a general, I mean, he's what, 22 on Draft Express now? So that must be a lot of medical right there. I mean, there's no other purpose he'd be there at 22. But if he somehow fell to 32, that's just somebody I think I could see McDonough taking a shot on, because the upside is a top five perimeter defender in the league. And you're not going to get those guys with those kinds of tools at that spot. So I like him as well. And one more guy, I guess, that could be there, Juwan Evans. I know you guys have a ton of point guards, but as far as Ulis being really dynamic, I really like Juwan Evans, though. I think he's going to be a high-level NBA point guard, a backup point guard, sorry. I think he's going to bring a lot of value there as far as his pick-and-roll creation prowess, his ability to get baskets in a short amount of time. So I lean those guys as far as being realistic picks, if we're not talking about Jordan Bell in that area. Guys like Sterling Brown I like as well, but they're more like late second rounder. I don't see them going at that spot that highly. So those would be the guys that would come to mind.
Yeah, Sterling Brown for me is a guy when I did my own mock draft, so like my sort of higher rankings were affecting the way the draft was going. I had Sterling Brown going 32. I really love his fit in the NBA, and especially just being a guy off the bench at the two guard, hit open shots, has the physicality, has the physical frame that you want out of a two guard right now, and can just do a little bit of everything, and just one of those guys that I just don't get that if he doesn't go like above 40, I'll just be really confused, but not really confused. The one thing I wanted to mention there, you make that point on OG. It happens almost every year. There's a guy that is a consensus top 10, top 15 prospect, top 20, whether it was Deontay Davis or TLC last year, or a couple examples last year. I remember Jordan Clarkson, he was gaining top 20 buzz, and then nope, he just fell at 46 or whatever it was. It happens every year. So I was going to ask you who you think that guy could be for the Suns at 32, but I think OG is the obvious one. That group, that Mitchell, Neal Akina, Collins, Anunoby, I can't see any of those guys besides OG slipping, can you?
Oh, no, I don't think so. I think that I personally have a little bit of a drop-off after the 11th overall pick, and I can't see those guys. They're too valuable in certain roles to fall down to the second round, unless there's some kind of glaring medical flag that we aren't aware of. And it seems like OG is the only realistic candidate for that, simply because of some of the medical reports these teams could be getting about his general physical or his explosion. If that's impacted, he's a pure tools and athleticism guy. So if there's any kind of if people are skeptical at all about that, I could see him plummeting because he really needs those to thrive in the league.
It might be a guy that we're already sort of settling on, like draft Twitter already has ranked outside the first round, like a John Collins, like a Justin Patton, like a Harry Giles, like a Bam Adebayo, where on draft night in like the mainstream sort of like ESPN, it's like, this guy can't stop falling, he's still in the green room, where as everyone is saying, yeah, like we had him ranked like 38 or whatever. I think it could be one of those guys that's someone to keep an eye on. TJ Leaf is another one of those, Ekanik Bogu, a couple of those, man. OG at 22 is nuts to me. I can't imagine passing on him at like 16, 17, 18, but crazier things have happened. All right, Cole, thank you so much. Told you this is going to be 15 to 20 minutes. I lied. Congratulations on making the longest Locked On Suns episode to date. I don't know why I'm congratulating you like that's a deal at all, but I'm very tired.
I have a quick question for you, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you think there's any chance that the Suns trade up to two? We've heard some of that talk. Do you think they do that or entertain that?
Yes, I think they highly entertain that. I think they have so many young guys right now. It's something I talked about on the last episode where we talked about the first wave of reports and smoke screens and all that. The Miami pick, it's just the two Miami picks, they have their own picks. The Miami pick, especially when the information about Chris Bosh released, I talked about they have this asset now where it is like that's a mid-first-round pick, probably mid to late first-round pick. It's a legitimate asset, but it's something where they're comfortable enough to trade it and it doesn't become into something great. Like I don't think they'll trade the 2021 pick. It's unprotected. I don't think they'll trade any of their own picks unprotected. I don't think they'll trade someone like Bender or Chris or Booker who could really turn into something. I don't see them doing that at all. But I see them trading something like that where it's like a legitimately good asset that everyone can agree upon is good, but it's not going to be anything that is great or outstanding. Now, they could draft someone there, of course, that turns into that. But I think something like the Miami pick, if you're looking for moving to 4 to 2, you can give up 4, you can give up the Miami pick, and maybe another protected first or the 2021 pick. I know I just said I don't think they'll deal it, but I think something like that, if they truly believe, I've said this draft all comes down to how the Suns have their big board planned out because of, we just talked about the 2 to 7 tier. However they have that ranked, if they have it like 1 and then they have a tier drop down obviously to 2, but then they have another tier drop down, they see there's without a doubt number 2 guy and it's Lonzo Ball if it's Josh Jackson. I think they could do that. From your perspective, do you have it in that same light?
I do. I think that that might be something to entertain depending on what the cost is. I brought it up just because I know some Sun fans might have been disappointed about not trading up to 1. I don't think they had the firepower to do that unless they included Booker. Philadelphia's assets are just more, they're more close to the future as far as the 18 unprotected LA pick. That's hugely valuable potentially in this 2018 class at the top. I mean, you got legitimate ceiling outcome guys there. And then the 19 unprotected Kings pick the year after Cousins leaves. So, I mean, those guys had, they were armed. So they had the assets to deal. I don't think the Suns did. But to the Lakers, man, 2 spots ahead, if the Lakers aren't enamored with somebody like Lonzo and this whole Dennis Smith thing to LA is actually has legs, I think that that could be a workable scenario.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I completely forgot. Again, I'm just going to blame how tired I am. The whole thing there is that the Lakers pick and the Kings pick, the reason these things, it's so like basic for people like us who follow the league all the time, but the Lakers pick and the Kings pick are so valuable because if your team wins, it does not matter. It matters how much the Lakers and the Kings are losing. So if the Suns trade their own unprotected pick, which I don't think they would ever do, that's where it gets dangerous. And I don't think the Suns would ever trade their own unprotected pick in a situation like this because they're probably going to be in the top 5-6 of the lottery again next year, and they're risking giving up their own potential number 1 pick. In a situation like this where the Sixers are offering this, they're still going to be able to hold on to their own first-round picks, probably with protections. I don't see them letting go of an unprotected first of their own. But in this situation, there's a limited damage that you are going to take on something like this. I know it took a while for Mark to turn around on the idea, but yes, you are potentially trading the number 1 overall pick. But you know what isn't potential about getting the Boston pick? The fact that it is the number 1 pick. It's the number 1 pick right now. You are getting Markel Fultz. You are not maybe getting Luka Doncic. You are not maybe getting Michael Porter. You're getting Markel Fultz right now. And for that sort of offer, I don't think the Suns could have, man, I mean, to go 4-1, let's talk hypothetical here to close it out. You'd have to give up your own first-round pick next year unprotected. You'd have to go with the Miami pick next year. Then you'd probably have to give up the 2021 Miami pick, right? Those three is the framework.
Absolutely. I think it would take all three of those to do that move just because you don't know how valuable any of those are going to be too far into the future. Teams are really like short-term based because of how much turnover is in the league right now. So I think it would definitely take all three of those picks. And honestly, if I'm Boston, I'm like, include Booker in the deal. I know that the Suns would never do that.
Yeah.
But that's the kind of claim that Boston is going to make because it is a lot of these picks are so far into the future and they don't have the same kind of perhaps the same upside combined with certainty that the Philadelphia 76ers had with theirs.
It's funny how we got back to this original point that we had in the discussion, but the certainty we talk about in this deal, Philadelphia knows what they have in Joel Embiid. We talked about it. He's one of the best two-way centers, just overall centers in the league, like right now, already, when he's healthy. Ben Simmons, best prospect in that draft class. I think we can agree. I had Ingram number one. Yes, I was that guy. But Simmons is, I can agree that I was wrong, and Simmons was the best prospect in that class. The Suns don't have that certainty right now. We just talked about it with Chris and Bender and Booker. There's uncertainty there as to how good those guys are going to be. They cannot risk those guys not working out, and then, oh crap, we traded the pick that turned out to be Luka Doncic or Michael Porter, and that guy turned out to be that Simmons, Embiid, Fultz, like, mega superstar potential kind of dude. I just did the exaggeration thing again. We talked about not doing. Okay, so
to wrap, great point.
Yeah, to wrap it up though, I think that is what we're looking at here. Is that in order for the Suns to give this up, they would have to add a certain level of own uncertainty to their future, and they do not have a core foundation right now. Whatever you want to say about Joel Embiid's health, that dude's a monster right now. Whatever you want to say about Ben Simmons' health, or that we haven't seen him play NBA, he is probably going to be at least a very good player in this league and could probably be a all-star for multiple years, and they probably are getting Markelle Fultz too. That foundation is insane. They can give up unprotected picks in the future. The Suns cannot do that right now. There is a very good chance they are not going to make the playoffs this decade. They made them in 2011 when they made the run. This decade, going the rest of the decade without making the playoffs. That is what we're talking about right now. So I just don't think they can do it. Cole, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. Plug anything you want.
Oh, no problem, man. Thanks for having me on again. What's on DraftPod? So check us out there. We are going to have to revamp everything we just did. We just did picks 1 through 6, and we went really in-depth, and now it doesn't really matter. So we're probably going to get together this weekend and kind of sift through that again. If you want to listen to the Suns excerpt, Jesus, I'm tired. If you want to listen to the Suns excerpt, do that. We just did a breakdown probably about 25, 30 minutes on Phoenix's current prospects, like Kellen already mentioned. And then at the Step Back, we'll have a lot of draft coverage. And one last thing, we are doing another live show. I think I did this last time before the lottery. We're doing another live draft show, so we're going to probably be on air for like 4 hours or so. It's going to be awesome. me, Sean Darenthal of Ode to Odin, and then probably Javier and Mark, depending on if Mark can separate himself from this Fultz euphoria. So we'll see how it goes. But no again, way. Man, thanks for having me. Yeah,
no problem. Sorry, everyone, we're making excuses that we're tired, but it is 11:30, but we had to podcast about this today. It's been such a huge day in the NBA draft world, so I hope you guys appreciate us going out of our way to get that done. Yes, I am boosting our egos at the end of this draft because we just went 40 minutes for you guys. Hope you guys enjoyed the conversation, and we'll be back next week. It's the NBA draft next week. We're finally there. Talk to you then.